We talk a lot about the environment on this program, and there are a lot of good reasons for that. First, I'm guessing, well, like me, you enjoy getting out and enjoy the wonderful natural areas that Wisconsin has to offer. And there's a real need to keep up on the threats to those natural areas and to our environment. And we need to know how we can help protect our lands. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. June is Invasive Species Awareness Month. And today we're taking a look at the invasive aquatic species that are a problem. A couple of guests for you. Bob Wakeman is the Wisconsin Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Bob, good to have you with us.
Thanks, Larry. Good morning.
Morning. And Bill Horns. Bill is the Great Lakes Fisheries Specialist for the Bureau of Fisheries Management and also Fisheries Representative to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Invasive Team. Bill, thanks. It's been a long time.
Good morning, Larry.
Been a long time since you were last with us, but it's great to have you back. Appreciate it very much. Well, I think we'd like to talk about what invasive species there are in our Wisconsin waters. And Bob, first, what are we looking at for the invasive aquatic plants?
Well, some of the most common aquatic invasive plants include things like Eurasian water milfoil, curly leaf pondweed. Then we get into some of our wetland plants that are people might recognize, purple loosestrife. The one that's catching a lot of attention lately is something called Phragmites. It's that tall one with the feathers up on top. So those are some real common aquatic or wetland invasive species we have in Wisconsin.
And Bill, what about fish and other animals, mussels maybe? Or
dry-sinned mussels are really the big story in the Great Lakes right now. And I'm going to limit most of my comments to Great Lakes issues because that's where I work.
Yeah, well, sure.
But Lake Michigan especially, the ecosystem is thought to be very much transformed by the proliferation of quagga mussels, which have displaced their congener, the zebra mussel, throughout most of the lake and now play a very large role in the lake ecosystem by capturing nutrients into the benthic layer.
So they're capturing nutrients. Somebody might say, "Well, good, get rid of the nutrients in the water." But that's not the way it works.
Well, you may well say that, and there is a little bit of a tension, I think, between perspectives about the role of nutrients and their implications for the food web. But we're seeing in the fish community some significant changes. In part, the decline of alewives may be attributable to that. Decline of bloater chubs. Failure of yellow perch to come back in southern Lake Michigan may be connected to this phenomenon. I wouldn't want to be too simplistic about it, but the decline in nutrients and primary production and secondary production by zooplankton in the open lake is a significant change that we've seen in the last 5 to 10 years.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sure we're going to get some questions on this. Maybe you're a boater as you listen in here. What do you know about the preventing the spread of invasive aquatic species? Or do you have questions about specific ones, be they plant or animal? I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question, photo, or a comment there, and we'd love to hear from you. What about where they come from? You know, there's so how do we wind up with some of these plants, for example? Let's Bob.
I'll tell you, the variety of places they come from is pretty extensive. Obviously, some of them are native in the U.S., but not to the Midwest, but they get here either by our doing or some other mechanism. Some come far away as New Zealand, Europe, Asia. The ballast water obviously has been tagged as a major source for species that have gotten to the Great Lakes. It comes over in the ballast water of ocean-going vessels. But also we're seeing a fair amount of stuff coming through the mail. The Internet, with all of its pluses, has really decreased the size of the planet. And so we're seeing things come through the mail because of Internet sales that don't belong here. And once people put them in a perhaps a backyard garden or a pond, they can escape from that environment and get into our natural systems and start to cause problems.
And we could probably identify one or two of those.
Oh, we've got some things like water chestnut or yellow floating heart, which are common plants that you might find in a backyard garden somewhere, water garden.
And they wind up in places where they shouldn't be.
Exactly, right.
And the same with some of these invasive animals that we're talking about as well, Bill.
I'm sorry. What?
In terms of where they come from.
Of course, in the Great Lakes, the primary source has been through the St. Lawrence Seaway, mostly in ballast, ship's ballast, but also some important ones have made their way on their own through the locks. But recently, most of them come in through ballast, ship ballast.
Yeah. We've got some callers online. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Terry in Menasha. Terry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. A birder friend of mine had explained to me that the reason why there was the resurgence of white pelicans is because zebra mussels eat the nutrients in the water and they made clear water. And so the pelicans need clear water in their habitat. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that relationship.
All right. Let's give that a try. Bill, you want to try it? Start with it?
Well, there's no doubt that zebra mussels and quagga mussels do clarify the water. They filter a tremendous amount of water, and they take out particles, and they don't eat everything that they filter out. A lot of it is bundled up and deposited in what are called pseudofeces. So they have tremendous capacity to filter water, and they will clarify it. Now, whether that is the deciding factor for pelicans, it certainly seems plausible because pelicans rely on finding prey by sight, and with clearer water, they're going to have an easier time finding fish to eat.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks, Terry.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. Well, you know, the spread, we talk about Lake Michigan, they're coming in on ballast, but aquatic plants get spread around by fishermen like me and hopefully not me, but people like me. I try to do my best when I'm going from landing to landing, but maybe you can talk a bit about that.
Yeah, Larry, that's we know from our polling and from our investigations that boaters are still the number one mechanism for aquatic plants and small organisms to get from one body of water to another. Whether it's attached to a trailer, whether it's attached to your prop, maybe it's in your bait bucket, maybe it's in your bilge water. These organisms are very, very good at moving from water body to water body, and we're really the mechanism for them to do that. So we've tried to do a number of things. We've put together a very extensive education outreach program. We have surveyed boaters at boat launches and know that over 94% of the boaters know what they need to do to prevent their transport of invasive species. They need to inspect their boats and trailers. They need to remove any aquatic plants or animals that they find on that equipment. They need to drain all the water from their boats. That includes their live well, their bilges. And also, if they do have a nice catch of bluegills or walleyes or crappies or perch, not to transport those fish home in water. We're trying to get boaters and anglers to transport things home on ice. Mm-hmm. Fish will taste better, and there's much less chance of moving aquatic organisms around if things are transported on ice.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and you're absolutely right. The fish are going to taste better when you got them on ice, so there's no reason why you can't stop at the local gas station or sport shop and get yourself a bag of ice.
And we've even gone so far as to start handing out some refreezable ice packs.
Oh, cool.
And these are...
got one in front of me here.
About 4x8, maybe, and they're a refreezable pack that has an aquatic invasive species message on it. And, Larry, you can have that one and put your next walleye on ice if you do decide to keep it.
Absolutely.
But we're trying to encourage boaters and anglers to take their catch home on ice rather than in water.
Makes very good sense. Talking today with Bob Wakeman, who's the Wisconsin Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator for the DNR. Bill Horns is the Great Lakes Fisheries Specialist for the Bureau of Fisheries Management. And he's the fisheries representative to the DNR's invasive species team. So it's great to have them along. Thanks for listening. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Margie in Cary, Illinois, thank you for calling. Hi, appreciate the call.
Hi, I'm calling about Phragmites. I live right, my property butts up to a wetland, and we used to have some big ponds here, and Phragmites is marching through, and instead of the diversity we once had, it's getting all filled with Phragmites, and is there anything we can do when it starts coming right up to us? Is there any way to stop it?
Yeah, is there a way to stop it? Well, Bob?
It's Phragmites is... if you drive along the coast of Lake Michigan, down Illinois and around Indiana, you see large expanses of Phragmites. It's a very tall plant. For those that aren't familiar with it, it can go 10, 12, 13 feet tall and has kind of a very feathery top to it. There is a native Phragmites as well, but the real problem one is the one that's invasive or not from around here. Controlling it has typically been done through the use of herbicides, chemicals, that are very effective at controlling Phragmites. The department did a control project along the western shore of Green Bay and all the way down into the western shore of Lake Michigan, down into as far down south as Manitowoc County, and has had some pretty good luck at controlling it using some of those herbicides. So I think if you've got large patches of it, that's probably the best way to control it.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any special herbicide in mind?
I think it kind of depends on the habitat that it's in.
Okay.
So not knowing all the details and not being ultimately familiar with those products, I'd say maybe talk to a local professional about what would work best
in
your
situation. Thank you so much for the tip. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We are talking with Bob Wakeman and Bill Horns, taking a look at invasive aquatic species, both animal and plant. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking invasive aquatic species today with a couple of great guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for listening in. Bob Wakeman, Wisconsin Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator for the DNR, and Bill Horns, a Great Lakes Fisheries Specialist for the Bureau of Fisheries Management. And, of course, he's also well-connected and representative, fisheries representative to the DNR Invasive Species Team. So great to have them along. Thank you for listening in. And again, if you have a question or comment, join us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Brian and Marinette next. Brian, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
The popular press always refers to Asian carp as though it's one entity. And there's two species of Hypophthalmictes, and then we have Mylopharyngodon. Would you please help educate the public that the threat from the so-called Asian carp is not just one species, it's several?
All right, guys, who wants to take a Bill, you want to take a crack at that?
Well, yeah, it's true. There are four species of Asian carp in the Mississippi-Illinois River system that are and two of them are planktivores, the silver and the big head, are the closest to Wisconsin. The black carp eats mollusks and benthic organisms, and the grass carp will eat plants and has been introduced to, for example, golf course ponds in Wisconsin, and we occasionally find grass carp in Wisconsin. But it is a very good point to make. These are very different fish ecologically.
Because I'm really surprised that they haven't made it into Lake Michigan yet. And with the weir and the Illinois River and all the rest of the things going on, what a catastrophe would that be? That would be, here we would have disturbance from the bottom up, from Dreissena, and then from the top down with all those, filter feeders like the big-headed carp and all, and that would really be quite the economic ecological disaster, wouldn't it?
I think the impact of those species is unknown. I think we should be concerned, and certainly in some areas they will proliferate. I don't think we really want to find out their impact on the Great Lakes.
No, absolutely not.
What the sea lamprey and everything else did, and boy, oh boy, what a disaster. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Brian, for calling. Appreciate it. Donna in Eagle River, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm glad to talk to you. I have a couple of comments about it, particularly Eurasian water milfoil. I used to live in Madison and moved up here about 6 years ago, and it seems to me that there is a vast difference in the way that the educational programs are handled at the boat landings. In Madison, I never saw anyone talking to people about the weeds on their trailers, and the Madison lakes really have quite a problem. And I see a very active program up here in Vilas County working with the boaters. But my particular concern, and I'm wondering if you can tell me, is there any program addressing the use of rental boats and personal watercraft to ensure that the companies renting them are taking the time to clean them out before they move from lake to lake? Because we see them being transported regularly here, and I don't know that anything's being done.
Yeah. Bob, go ahead.
Sure. I think that's a very good observation. The department supports a variety of ways of talking to boaters, and one of the ways we do that is by working with volunteers that might work at a boat launch and talking to boaters as they come and go out of the boat launch and the importance of cleaning boats and trailers and that sort of stuff off. There are differences in involvement across the state in that effort from north to south. We're trying to increase the amount of participation in the Clean Boats, Clean Waters program, especially in the southeastern part of the state where we have quite a few lakes that have invasive species in them. But you mentioned rental businesses that rent boats and trailers and that sort of thing, and I've heard this earlier as well, that these folks aren't as aware as they need to be and don't take the necessary steps that they need to in order to prevent the spread. And we've worked with many of the counties up in northern Wisconsin to have a county aquatic invasive species coordinator, and they've identified this as a problem. So what we've tried to do is provide materials to them, to lake management groups, to river organizations, so that they can approach those businesses and say, hey, you know, we love having you in our neighborhood, in our community. We support your business, but we want to make sure that your business isn't going to help or hurt the lakes that we all love in this area. So we want the approach to be very local for those businesses and educate them so that they can do the right thing to make sure that their customers, their clients, take the time to clean off boats and trailers before moving them around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I do know that locally in Vilas County anyway, some of the sense is that the students that are hired to transport the personal watercraft from lake to lake are more concerned about getting the rentals taken care of, and I don't know how easy it is to set up a program so that they can actually clean out the, I'm not sure of the technical term, but there's some parts of the personal watercraft that would lend themselves to harboring invasives pretty nicely, and it would take some special work to clean that out between uses.
Yeah.
So it's a big concern, and I'm happy that there is so much work being done to alert and educate people, but there are certain little issues like this that continue to be problem areas.
Yeah. Donna, thank you so much for calling. And, you know, the hard part of this is it's like one boat, one jet ski, not properly taken care of and in the wrong spot can go to another lake, and one, if I'm not mistaken, can really, in the end, completely, well, not destroy, but I mean, spread the plants or whatever they are across the entire lake.
It is something that people need to be aware of, and this show is going to really increase folks' awareness. We kind of equate it to catching a cold. During the cold season, you may be exposed to the cold virus several times, but there may be that one instance where you're going to actually come down with a cold. Mm-hmm. And aquatic invasive species are very similar. It may take several inoculations of, say, zebra mussel, villager, to get into that lake before it actually becomes established. That doesn't give us a bye. That doesn't give us an excuse to be sloppy at the boat launch. We just need to be very vigilant about our efforts to clean our boats and trailers before we move off the launch.
Yeah. We had an email from Kevin who says, I have a 300-gallon yard pond. Would zebra mussels clear up the water in my pond, the green algae?
It would probably do very well to clean up your 300-gallon pond in your backyard. It would be illegal for you to put those into your pond and to use them as such. There are laws in the state that prevent you from having, possessing, transferring, transporting regulated species, and zebra mussels are one of those regulated species. So I would encourage you to consider an alternative mechanism.
And, you know, you get that blue-green algae. A lot of that's fertilizer, isn't it, that promotes that? So
right. Yeah, if you can minimize the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus getting in your pond, you'll reduce mm-hmm. the amount of algae produced.
For sure. And that won't cost you anything. John in Menominee, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi, guys. I have a question that maybe you can help us with. We've got a little cottage up on a lake in northwestern Wisconsin that's recently had Eurasian milfoil. It's turned into quite a problem, and like you were just suggesting, Larry, it seemed like it started small about 5 years ago, and now it's all over the lake. But anyhow, my question is this. It's being treated with a herbicide that's based on 2,4-D, and we understand that that's been approved by the EPA, but just recently we found a fish kill, a lot of dead bluegill, and a couple of crappie, and I think I even found a catfish in there, all washed up on my shoreline. And is there any possible connection between that herbicide that's being used and the fish kill?
That's a good question. I've been familiar with the use of aquatic herbicides for control of aquatic plants throughout the state for many years. I have never seen that particular product have any direct impact on fish. Now, there are other ways that fish may suffer from the use of aquatic herbicides. It may, as those aquatic plants begin to decay and decompose, it consumes water consumes oxygen that's in the water, and they may stress the fish that are in those treatment areas. But I've never seen a direct relationship between the use of the product 2,4-D and fish.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
So you're welcome. Good news. Good. Thank you very much for calling, John. Appreciate it. And Mike in Lake Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Question about using a boat on the same body of water but in a different spot. Say we go boating in Wisconsin Dells above the dam and Lake Wisconsin and down below the dam in Sauk, all in the Wisconsin River. Should we be cleaning the boat between those trips? And I guess I'll extend that to Lake Michigan, too. Say if we go out in Chicago area and then come up north towards Door County, should I be cleaning in between those since it's different? I guess same question, both bodies of water.
Yeah.
Good question. I would advise yes. There are parts, especially in Lake Michigan, where you may have some aquatic invasive species in the lower or southern part of Lake Michigan that you might not have in the other parts of Lake Michigan. So as you transport your boat between launches, take the time to clean it off. One, you're setting a good example for others at the launch. And two, if there is a difference in the number of species or the types of species between those launches, you're sure to prevent their spread. Yeah. And same on the Wisconsin River or other water bodies like that. Set a good example at the boat launch.
Yep.
Great. Yep. Sounds good.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. We have Joe in St. Croix Falls up next. By the way, there were some open lines now. You can get on with your question as we talk invasives with our two guests, Bob Wakeman and Bill Horns, at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Joe in St. Croix Falls, it is your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
I understand that beneficial insects are sometimes used to control plants such as purple loosestrife, and I was wondering if your guests could talk a little bit about the pros and cons of using beneficials as opposed to herbicides to control some of these exotic species. And I'll take that comment off the air.
And we've had some success, I believe, with purple loosestrife in particular, have we not, Bob?
Purple loosestrife is one of those shining success stories in the state of Wisconsin. If you have lived in the state for a number of decades, you probably know that our wetlands used to turn purple this time of the year, June, July, into August. Very tall, purple-flowering plant known as purple loosestrife was really dominating our wetlands. And thanks to a beetle, Gallerosella beetle, which tends to find purple loosestrife to be very tasty, and the work of hundreds of volunteers that have raised those beetles and have transported them throughout the state to the purple loosestrife beds, we have seen a huge reduction in the abundance of purple loosestrife. And I give an awful lot of credit to Brock Woods at the UW Extension, who has coordinated that program and worked with those volunteers. Tremendous amount of effort. And I don't think we're ever going to get rid of purple loosestrife, but we have really kicked it back significantly. And, Joe, your question was about use of biological versus chemical. And I think there's a role for each to play. I think where we can, it's always great to be able to use beneficial organisms to control an invasive species. Where that's not possible, and if we can use herbicides responsibly, I think they have a role to play as well.
And thanks a lot. Appreciate that. And caller Carl wonders if the proposed fish passage at the dam in Sauk City would allow for the movement of invasives. For instance, if Asian carp can be moved as eggs, could that be possibly an issue? Bill, start with you.
Bob, you may know more about that specifics than I do, but that will be a trap and transfer facility so that fish will be caught and can be individually examined or even rinsed or cleaned to make sure they wouldn't have attached eggs or whatever. So whether invasives are transported through that will be a function on the details and mechanically how that works and the vigilance of the people that are operating that facility.
Yeah, I bet. Mm-hmm. Anything to add there, Bob?
No, I'll just add that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they are currently doing a environmental assessment of that project to make sure that the decision that's made is the correct decision before they go ahead and start building anything there.
We have a George in Cable, Wisconsin, up next. George, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello. I wondered where it all ended up with the rusty crayfish issue. I know it's been some time, and I didn't know if you spoke about that already today.
I haven't spoken about rusty crayfish yet.
No, we haven't. Rusties have kind of been with us for many years as well, and the department has tried a couple of different strategies. We've tried different stocking regimes of predator fish. We've tried different slot sizes for different fish so that we maintain a healthy predator base. We've even supported some trapping of rusty crayfish. Rusty crayfish, for those that aren't familiar with them, are crayfish that consume vegetation and can do a pretty good job at decimating the aquatic plant community in a lake. And healthy aquatic plant communities do a number of things, help support the diversity of fish and wildlife that use the lake, and also help to prevent the invasion by non-invasive species. So rusties are still out there. There is some work being done on a parasite that has been found to reduce, not necessarily kill them, but to reduce their health. And we're supporting that research with some funding, and that may come into play somewhere down the road.
I could Sorry, go ahead and add, rusty crayfish, regarding our invasive species regulations now, all non-native crayfish are prohibited with the exception of the rusty. That's listed as an established non-native crayfish species. And it's not legal to carry it around unless you're going to carry it over and go fishing on the Mississippi River with that rusty crayfish. So it's a restricted use of the rusty crayfish right now under our regs.
Okay. There we go. Thanks, George. Appreciate it. And we have Taylor in Cambridge now. Taylor, hi.
Hi. Say, I'm just on the road, but I've been listening to you. Say, a follow-on to that loosestrife question. What specifically is the public empowered to legally do without warrant or without any special documentation? I see purple loosestrife on public property. What am I able to do positively right now today? And next to that, what's going on with those cormorants that are eating everything in Michigan?
All right. So what can we do as individuals? Can we do anything on public land, Bob?
I think it's important to educate property owners. There's an awful lot of purple loosestrife that is on public land. We certainly take efforts to spread the beetles onto those public lands. We look for volunteers to help grow and raise those beetles for release. Without that volunteer network, I don't think we would have been anywhere near as successful. So if you are aware of purple loosestrife stands, you can notify the County Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator, or you can contact the local lake management specialist, and we can put that on our list of spots to release some beetles at. That'd be great.
Wonderful.
I can't address the cormorant issue. I apologize. That one's outside my area.
Okay.
It's a fun read on the internet, though. I'll tell you, there's some nasty things in Michigan with cormorants.
Yeah.
And just so you know, there is a cormorant control program going on in Wisconsin through the Department of Ag Wildlife Services Division. They are doing egg oiling. Vegetable oil is sprayed onto cormorant eggs on nesting islands in Green Bay, and it's having an effect. Cormorants aren't gone, but they're probably less of them. Certainly, the population is growing more slowly, and there is a large effort up in Michigan waters as well. But the cormorants are still here.
Yep, they still.
Wonderful. Thanks.
Thanks, Taylor. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. Well, talking about violators, people who, you know, like take their boats from one spot to another and don't bother to clean. Has taxing violators ever been discussed? A penalty for those who knowingly would import or grow or harbor or transport whatever?
Yeah, we have. We've worked closely with our conservation wardens. Chief Randy Stark is a very strong supporter for enforcement of the aquatic invasive species laws in the state of Wisconsin. And we've got a couple of things that are coming into play here. We have a group of deputy wardens called water guards that may be credentialed. That is, they may carry guns and have the ability to write citations. And all of our other conservation wardens, of course, do as well. And all of the wardens in the state are required to address AIS in their areas, and they do this through a variety of means. What we are seeing is an increase in the number of citations that are being written. If you are caught leaving a boat launch, the parking area, and getting onto a public road, if you're caught with aquatic plants or water on board, you can receive a citation from any law enforcement agent in the state of Wisconsin. Hmm. And we're beginning to see an increase in the number of enforcement actions that are being taken because we're kind of done with the education part. People should know about this. We know that a large percentage of boaters are aware of this, and now it's time to make sure that we've got some compliance involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sylvia in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a quick question on the Phragmites.
Yeah.
Whether it's all invasive or if there is a native variety, because I'm seeing two different types of heads. One's a very large, dark, and one's a very small, light-colored.
Yeah.
You're right, Sylvia. There are two different types. There is a native Phragmites and an invasive Phragmites. The invasive species tends to be much more robust and tends to be taller, and its seed head at the end of the year tends to last much longer than the native Phragmites. So your observations are right on.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. As we're kind of winding down here now, I want to turn back to what can we all do. And, Bill, let's start with you. From your perspective, what should each of us be doing?
Individually, I would think probably the biggest issue, if you're a boater, is to understand the regulations that Bob described about transporting things in your boat and cleaning your boat when you're done, when you're leaving a lake.
And Bob, agree there, or you got something in addition you might want to add?
No, I think with boaters being so important in the state and being the number one mechanism for these things to move around, making sure boaters clean their boats before they move out, understand what the bait rules are in the state of Wisconsin, that's gonna play a large role in our ability to prevent, contain, and control the aquatic invasive species in Wisconsin.
Well, guys, I want to thank you so much for being with us today, and hopefully we can have you back and talk about this again.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks so much. Bob Wakeman is Wisconsin Aquatic Invasive Species Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR, and Bill Horns, Great Lakes Fisheries Specialist for the Bureau of Fisheries Management, and the fisheries representative to the DNR's invasive species team. We'll get them back and we'll do it again. You know, our wetland areas are so important and such a wonderful part of our state and our environment. And fishing is one activity that certainly can be affected by threats to these waters. And coming up next, professional angler Gary Engberg is here to talk about summertime fishing. I hope you'll stay tuned, because that's coming up next, right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.